Okay, so sometimes, you run across these legal questions that just kind of make you stop and think, oh, wait a minute. And this whole question about medical residents, they're basically doctors. They've gone through med school, but they're still in training. They're putting in these crazy hours. Like, should they be exempt from Social Security taxes? I mean, on the one hand, they are still learning, right?
They are.
But on the other hand, they're providing, really important medical care.
Absolutely. And that tension that you just highlighted is exactly what the Supreme Court had to grapple with in a 2011 case called Mayo Foundation v. United States.
Okay.
But this case wasn't just about, the taxes of one specific group of people.
Right.
It really dives into how government agencies go about interpreting laws
Right.
and the impact that those interpretations have, on everyone.
Yeah, for sure. And to really understand this, we've kind of gone through a few different sources.
Okay.
We've got some podcast analysis that kind of breaks down the basics of the case.
Sure.
And then we actually went and pulled the Supreme Court's opinion itself,
Oh, wow.
which has some really interesting reasoning in it.
I bet.
And then just to round it all out, we've got a standard legal brief that lays out, all the key arguments.
Rice.
Our goal today is to kind of unpack all of that for you and, really get into what were the main arguments that were presented to the court,
Okay.
what was the logic that they used to make their decision,
Right.
and ultimately, what does this case tell us about the power that these government agencies have when they're trying to figure out what laws actually mean,
Yeah.
especially, in a field as important as tax law?
For sure. For sure.
So to start off, maybe we can kind of paint a picture of what these medical residency programs are actually like.
Yeah, I think that's a great place to start because we're not just talking about, an undergraduate student who's working part-time at the library or something. At Mayo, these are people who have already finished medical school. They've got their MD and they're working, really long hours, 50, 80 hours a week in a hospital,
Oh my goodness.
taking care of patients. They're diagnosing, they're
Yeah.
coming up with treatment plans.
So they're really in the thick of it.
Exactly. Yeah. They're really doing the work of a doctor.
Right. And obviously they're being supervised by more senior
Of
doctors.
course, yeah. They have attending physicians overseeing them.
But they're not just like watching from the sideline.
No, they are actively practicing medicine,
Okay.
but at the same time, it is still a training environment. They're
Oh.
going to lectures, they're doing educational activities.
They're probably getting tested still.
Oh, yeah, lots of evaluations.
And they get paid for this work, right?
They get what's called a stipend,
Okay.
and it can be, over $40,000 a year plus benefits.
So not insignificant.
Not at all.
And normally that kind of income, you'd be paying FICA taxes on that.
Right, exactly. Social Security and Medicare.
Okay, but then there's this exemption for students.
Right.
So how does that work?
So in the law that created these taxes, the Federal Insurance Contributions Act,
Okay, FICA.
yes, FICA, it says that services performed by students can be exempt.
Right.
The general idea is that if your main focus is learning and any work you're doing is just kind of secondary to that, it's part of your studies, then you might not have to pay these taxes.
I see. And that's where the whole issue in the Mayo case comes up, right?
Exactly. That's the heart of it.
Okay, so Mayo's looking at their residents and they're saying, well, look, these folks are spending a lot of time learning.
Yeah.
They're doing all these educational activities, so they should be exempt from these FICA taxes.
Right. They're saying that the student part of being a resident is more important than the employee part.
But then the Treasury Department, they come in and they're like, hold on a second.
Well, yeah, the Treasury Department wanted to clarify things a
Yeah,
bit.
okay.
So back in 2004, they came out with a rule, and it had a very specific criterion. It said if you're working full time,
Okay.
meaning 40 hours a week or more, then you don't qualify for this student exemption.
Interesting. So pretty clear cut.
Yeah, they wanted to draw a bright line.
Makes sense.
And importantly, this rule specifically included medical residents.
Oh, Mayo's not going to like that.
Nope, they were not happy about that at all.
Right, because now their residents are working, these long hours,
Right.
but they can't claim the exemption.
Exactly.
So that's when Mayo decides to sue, right?
Yeah, that's right. They filed a lawsuit.
Okay.
They wanted a refund for all the FICA taxes they had paid on their resident stipends.
Oh, wow.
They were arguing that their residents should be considered students for the purpose of this tax exemption.
So it goes to court. What happens?
Well, first it went to a district court,
Okay.
and that court actually sided with Mayo.
Interesting.
They agreed that the residents should be exempt,
Wow.
But then it went up to the Court of Appeals,
uh-huh.
and they reversed the decision.
Oh, so now they're siding with the Treasury Department.
Exactly. They said the Treasury's interpretation was correct.
So now we've got this split between the lower courts.
Yeah, classic setup for the Supreme Court to step in.
Right, because now somebody's got to decide who's right.
Exactly. And so the case goes up to the highest court in the land.
Okay, so now we're at the Supreme Court,
yep.
and they've got this big question in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
Was this rule that the Treasury Department made, you know, this 40-hour rule that says medical residents aren't exempt?
Right.
Was that a valid interpretation of the law?
Yeah, that was the key question. Did the Treasury Department overstep its bounds?
Okay, and to figure that out, the court uses this thing called Chevron deference.
Yeah, Chevron deference is really important in administrative law.
So for those of us who aren't, you know, super familiar with administrative law, what is Chevron deference?
Well, it's basically a two-step process that courts use when they're looking at how an agency like the Treasury Department
okay.
has interpreted a law passed by Congress.
So Congress makes the law, the agency interprets it.
Right, and the courts are supposed to give some deference to the agency's interpretation.
Okay, I'm starting to see how this is relevant.
Yeah.
So what's the first step in this process?
The first step is all about whether Congress directly addressed the specific issue in the law itself.
Okay, so in this case, we're talking about the FICA statute.
Right, the one that created Social Security and Medicare taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And it mentions this student exemption.
Right.
But it doesn't actually define what a student is.
Hmm. Interesting. So it's kind of vague.
Yeah, it is. And it definitely doesn't say anything specifically about medical residents.
Oh, so there's some wiggle room there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And because Congress didn't give a clear answer on this particular point, the statute is considered ambiguous.
So that's step one. You're basically checking if Congress already made it crystal clear.
Right. If Congress was super specific,
mm.
the agency doesn't really have any room to interpret.
Right, right. But in this case, they weren't. So
right.
what's step two?
So if the statute is ambiguous, like it is here, then we move on to step two.
Okay.
And this is where the court asks whether the agency's interpretation of the ambiguous statute is reasonable.
Okay, so in this case, the Treasury Department's interpretation is that 40-hour rule.
Exactly.
So the court's looking at that rule and saying, okay, is this a reasonable way to understand what the student exemption means?
Right. And it's important to note that the court isn't trying to decide if it's the best possible interpretation or even if it's the way they would have interpreted it.
Oh, so they're not saying, oh, we think this is the absolute best way to do it.
No, not at all.
Interesting.
The standard is much lower.
Yeah.
It's just whether the agency's interpretation makes sense.
Like, is it a permissible reading of the statute?
Exactly. Could a reasonable person looking at the law come to this interpretation?
Okay, so it's not about right or wrong. It's more like, well, is this within the bounds of what the law could mean?
Exactly.
Fascinating.
Yeah, it's a pretty deferential standard.
So what did the Supreme Court decide in this case?
Well, in a unanimous decision.
Really? So all the justices agreed?
Yep. All eight of them who heard the case agreed.
Wow. Okay.
They affirmed the Court of Appeals ruling.
So they sided with the Treasury Department.
Yes. They said that the 40-hour rule was a reasonable interpretation of the FICA statute.
Interesting. I mean, what was their reasoning, though? Like, why did they think that rule was reasonable?
Well, there were a few key factors that swayed them. One of the big ones was just practicality.
Oh, okay. So, like, how easy is this rule to actually apply?
Exactly.
Yeah.
They said that having a clear, bright line rule, like this 40-hour threshold,
mm-hmm.
makes it a lot easier for the Treasury Department to administer this exemption.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine trying to figure out if every single medical resident in the country is primarily a student or an employee?
Oh, it'd be a nightmare.
Right. It would be so subjective.
Yeah. You'd have to go through every case individually, look at their schedule.
How much time are they spending in lectures versus actually treating patients?
Right. Exactly. It would be a huge administrative burden.
So the 40-hour rule just cuts through all that.
Exactly. It's simple and easy to apply.
Okay. I get that. What else were they thinking about?
The court also looked at the bigger picture.
Yeah.
The purpose of Social Security.
Okay.
Which is, you know, to provide this broad safety net for workers.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically said that medical residents are more like employees than students.
Because they're working so much.
Right. They're working full time. They're getting paid a decent salary.
And they're doing the work of doctors.
Exactly. They're providing a valuable service.
So the court's saying it makes sense for them to contribute to the system.
Right. And to benefit from it when they retire.
Right. Right. Okay, so they're kind of looking at the economic realities here.
Yeah, they're not just looking at the label of residents.
Mm.
They're looking at what these residents are actually doing.
Makes sense. So what about Mayo's arguments? Did they just kind of roll over?
Oh, no, they definitely pushed back. They had a couple of main points. One was that the 40-hour line seemed kind of arbitrary.
Like, why 40? Why not 30 or 50?
Yeah, exactly. Why that specific number?
So what did the court say to that?
The court said, look, we get it. Any specific number might seem a little random, but you got to draw the line somewhere.
Right, you need a clear rule.
Exactly. And they said that 40 hours is a pretty standard measure of full-time work.
Okay, so it's not like they just pulled that number out of thin air.
No, it's a pretty common benchmark.
Okay, what was Mayo's other big argument?
Their other argument was more about how courts should review tax rules.
Oh, interesting.
They said, look, taxes are a big deal.
Yeah, they affect everybody.
Exactly. So they argued that courts should be tougher on the Treasury Department when it comes to interpreting tax laws.
So, like, give them less leeway.
Yeah, less deference.
Interesting, but the court didn't buy that.
Nope, they rejected that argument completely.
Oh, wow.
They said very clearly that Chevron deference applies to all agency interpretations.
So it doesn't matter if it's tax law or environmental law or whatever.
Exactly. It's all the same standard of review.
And Chief Justice Roberts actually had a really pointed quote about this in the opinion.
Oh, yeah, what was it?
He said, "The principles underlying our decision in Chevron apply with full force in the tax context."
Oh, yeah, that's a pretty strong statement.
Right. Like, they're making it very clear that they're not making an exception for tax law.
Nope, Chevron is Chevron.
Okay. And there was another quote that I thought was really interesting,
Oh, yeah.
where the court says, "An employee working 40 or more hours per week has filled the conventional measure of available time with work."
I like that one.
It really gets at the idea that if you're working that much, you're an employee.
Yeah, regardless of whether you're also learning things.
So the court's really emphasizing that economic reality.
Right, and their view of what it means to be an employee.
Okay, so beyond just medical residents, what does this case tell us about how government agencies work?
Well, it really highlights how much power agencies have to interpret laws, especially when those laws are kind of ambiguous.
Like when Congress leaves some things open to interpretation.
Right, which happens a lot, let's be honest.
Yeah, laws can be really complicated.
Exactly. So the agency, like the Treasury Department in this case, steps in and says, okay, here's what we think this part of the law means. And as long as their interpretation is reasonable.
Meaning it kind of makes sense within the context of the law.
Right, as long as it's not totally out there.
Then the courts are likely to uphold it.
Exactly. They're going to defer to the agency's expertise.
So for, our listeners out there, what does this mean for them?
Well, it means that these agencies have a huge impact on your lives.
Because they're the ones interpreting the laws that affect you every day.
Right. They're the ones making the rules about everything.
Like how much you pay in taxes.
Yeah, or what kind of pollution is allowed.
Or what safety standards businesses have to follow.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So understanding how this all works, this interplay between Congress and the agencies and the courts is really important.
So in the Mayo case, the immediate impact is that medical residents have to pay FICA taxes.
Right. And that affects not only the residents themselves, but also the hospitals and medical schools that employ them.
Right. It's kind of a ripple effect.
Exactly. But this case is bigger than just taxes. It's really a classic example of administrative law in action.
Right. It shows how this whole system is supposed to work.
Yeah, you've got Congress making the laws.
And the agencies figuring out the details of how to apply those laws.
And then the court stepping in if there's a dispute about whether the agency went too far.
So to sum it all up, the Mayo case shows us how the Supreme Court uses this Chevron deference thing to decide if an agency's interpretation of a law is okay.
Right.
And it confirms that this applies even when it comes to taxes.
Yeah, no special treatment for tax law.
Basically, it tells us that if Congress doesn't spell things out super clearly in a law,
Right.
then the courts are going to give a lot of weight to what the agencies say.
As long as what they say is reasonable.
Exactly. So it leaves you with this question of, how much power should these agencies have?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question.
Right. Because on the one hand, they're the experts.
Right. They know the ins and outs of these complex issues.
But on the other hand, they're not elected by the people.
Yeah, so where's the line between giving them the flexibility to do their jobs and making sure they're not overstepping their authority?
That's a tough one.
Yeah. And it's something to think about in all areas of law, not just taxes.
So here's a final thought for you listening.
Okay.
We live in a world where You know, the government regulates pretty much everything.
Right.
So how do we balance the need for clear rules with the potential for these agencies to get too powerful?
Yeah. What happens when they start interpreting laws in ways that Congress never intended?
Or in ways that hurt individuals or businesses?
Right. That's a really important question, and it's one that the Mayo case forces us to confront.
It might not have all the answers.
Yeah.
But it definitely highlights the issues that are at stake.
Definitely food for thought.
For sure.
Absolutely.